Episode 885, Bond, James Bond, the Connery era.
That's a good title for the series.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiVono, and we're here to talk about James Bond himself.
That's right. Now, it's kind of funny when I say that's a good title. We don't always talk about the title, so I was finding out live with all of you.
I was surprised you trusted me.
Yeah. I didn't know where. I guess I didn't even think to not trust you.
Wow.
I know. That's crazy.
Yeah. No, it was completely appropriate. I'm excited for this. So just to give everybody a little background on where this is coming from, up until maybe a couple months ago, I'd seen very few James Bond movies. I know I'd seen the first three Daniel Craig ones. I haven't seen Spectre. I'd seen GoldenEye. I'd seen Goldfinger. And I think that was it. Okay. I'd seen Never Say Never Again, which is a remake of Thunderball that we won't get to tonight.
I mean, my story is similar, but if you flash back to 2019, before 2019, I had seen everything from Daniel Craig. I had seen the very first Sean Connery film, Dr. No. And of course, Pierce Brosnan. I think I'd seen all of the Pierce Brosnan movies.
Oh, I had seen Die Another Day.
But when you think of the classic Connery,
right.
Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, even though Lazenby, I hadn't seen any of those except for Dr. No. So 2019 hits. They're available all over the place.
Right.
Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, but at different times throughout the year and not in any sort of regular release order. So I was watching these, I mean, the best I could in order, but really just as they became available. And I think I told you I might try to figure out, it shouldn't be too hard. I'll try to figure out my exact viewing order sometime. That might be fun to check out. But yeah, so I'm happy to talk about these movies. And I was excited to go through them. I have them all ranked. I don't think I like them quite as much as you.
Yeah, I think that that's going to become very clear as we go. So I bought at the end of last year the Blu-ray set of all the Bond movies up through Spectre, or at least all the Eon Productions. It didn't have the Never Say Never or Never Again or the Casino Royale, either of the early Casino Royales. And you think, wait, there's only one early Casino Royale. Not so fast. We'll talk about that. But I started watching them, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm really, really enjoying it. So we're going to do a series of episodes on this. We're going to do the Connery era, which also includes the Lazenby era. It wasn't really an era. It was one movie. And then next time we'll do Roger Moore's. And we'll include Never Say Never Again in there. And then we'll do Dalton and Brosnan. And then we'll do Daniel Craig. And then I'm reading the novels, too. I've read 4 of them out of 14. So I got a ways to go. But I'd like to cover that a little bit. We'll talk about that a little bit tonight. And then it also ran as a weekly comic strip for many, many years. Okay. So I'm curious about getting those. So there's a whole bunch of James Bond.
So you're
going to
get the comic strip?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they've collected editions and all of that. In fact, that I believe that started coming out before any of the movies were made. But I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Along the way, I'm reading a book that came out a couple years ago called Nobody Does It Better, which of course is one of the theme songs from the Roger Moore era. And it's great. It's largely quotes, interviews, all of that from behind the scenes. But it goes through every film individually, and is really, really fascinating. But I'm thoroughly enjoying experiencing James Bond for the very first time as we go. And you are enjoying it a little bit less, but we're going to do this anyway.
I'm definitely interested in talking through them.
So before we get into the movies, and we'll kind of go through the movies and we can talk about our opinions, and then I've got some interesting trivia or facts or behind-the-scenes stuff for the different movies as we go through, let's just talk about a little bit of James Bond before Dr. No, because I think most people think of Dr. No as the start of James Bond, but it's very much not. So before Dr. No even comes out in 1962, I think it was.
Let me see. Yep, 62.
Ian Fleming had already published 10 of his 14 James Bond novels. Okay. Well, there's 12 novels and then 2 short story collections in there. And he'd been interested in having an adaptation made for a long time. And in fact, back in 1955, he actually sold the rights to Casino Royale And there was an early American version made, a one-hour made-for-TV special. It's actually filmed live. And
it had an anthology. Like,
yes.
It felt like it was in the midst of some sort of anthology TV show.
Yeah, I think the idea, I'm not familiar with whatever program it was a part of, but it was supposed to be kind of like a Twilight Zone thing mm-hmm. where every episode is its own story. But he sold it to them. It's actually about 50 minutes long, and it adapts Casino Royale, kind of, sort of, not really. So if you know anything about Casino Royale, you know that up until 2006, when the Daniel Craig movie is made, the rights were not with Eon Productions, which is the main production house that's made all of the James Bond movies except for three, except for this early Casino Royale, the 1967 Casino Royale, and Never Say Never Again, which is the remake of Thunderball. And so Casino Royale is there one of two places where the Bond rights have been complicated. We'll talk about the other one as we go. So, but let's just start here with this early 1955 version. I don't want to spend too much time on it because the interesting stuff is as we come later, but we both watched it.
Yeah, just recently. I mean, you sent me the link. It's on YouTube. It's I watched on YouTube. It, what, like 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, so if you just Google Casino or search on YouTube for Casino Royale 1955.
54.
Or 54, yeah, you'll find it right away. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was better than I expected it to be.
I agree. I had virtually no expectations, and I think I might have even given it 2 out of a score because I went in there just expecting nothing. And I gave it 3.5, which is higher than some of the Sean Connery movies.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is probably not true.
You do have it way too high.
Yeah. What did you give yours?
I think I gave it a 3-star, but I'd say relative to where I'm ranking the other ones.
Yeah.
Whereas you are ranking the other ones quite low, but we'll talk about that.
You have some theories, I'm guessing?
Oh, yeah, I do have some theories.
You always have theories on why I don't like things, which I like to hear.
I have documentation, actually. Okay. So we'll get to that. But yeah, Peter Lorre plays Le Chiffre, and then I didn't recognize the actor who plays Jimmy Bond, American Jimmy Bond.
Yes, everything is flipped. So
yes, Felix is British.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, but he is, he plays the hotel manager in The Shining, so the person who Jack goes and interviews with at the beginning. Stuart Ullman, I think his name is in The Shining. But so 1955, I think Ian Fleming sells the rights for $5,000. He doesn't make much money off of it, but for the next 50 years, the rights to Casino Royale are outside of Eon Productions. So that doesn't work quite as well as he wants. There's still talk of an additional, you know, Casino Royale movie being made, and that starts production around the same time. And of course, we'll see where that goes a little bit later on. But Ian Fleming is still very interested in seeing his work adapted into a movie. So he starts working with a producer by the name of Kevin McClory.
That sounds familiar.
Well, so maybe I don't know where you would have heard it from. I don't think he's known for anything outside of his James Bond connection. And Kevin McClory has an idea that instead of adapting one of Fleming's existing novels, we're going to write an original James Bond story. And the title of this is James Bond and the Secret Service, a title that would later become Thunderball. So the original James Bond movie script is Thunderball. Now, if you know anything about the order of James Bond, Thunderball is actually the fourth movie that is made. So if you're saying to yourself, I bet there's a little bit of an interesting backstory here, you would be correct. So Kevin McClory writes this script, and for a while it's starting to go into production, and it's moving forward, it's moving back. The mafia are in it as the main villains for a while. But then something interesting happens along the way as they're refining the script. Spectre is born. So Spectre, of course, is the evil villainous organization headed by Ernst Blofeld, who is Bond's primary antagonist.
His Moriarty.
Yes. Up until that point in Fleming's career, he had been using the historical real-life organization of SMERSH, which was connected to Soviet Russia.
I have actually heard this, but keep going.
So Fleming, in the late 50s, was very worried that the Cold War was about to end and his books would suddenly become irrelevant. So the decision was made that we're going to dump SMERSH and bring in Spectre, which is what the script to Thunderball did. We will come back to Thunderball momentarily, but just hang on to that thread. So this is all developing. along the same time, a little movie that we just both rewatched called North by Northwest comes out. Oh, yeah.
So my main preparation for this episode is watching North by Northwest again, which I really like.
North by Northwest is really significant to James Bond's development in a couple of different ways. So, you know, if you've seen North by Northwest, or even if you haven't, here's all you really need to know about North by Northwest for the purpose of this episode, is that there's no actual spy. Well, there are spies in it, but our main character, Cary Grant, is actually an admin. But he is effectively in the role of the spy. He's the man caught in events larger than himself.
Unwilling spy.
Unwilling spy. That's a good way to put it. And it's made in Hitchcock's typical style. It's very exciting. There's a lot of adventure. It's a globe-trotting affair, all of that. And it comes at a critical moment because the question at this point is, how are we going to adapt the Ian Fleming James Bond into a successful series of movies? And I think it's hard to appreciate, when you come to things backwards, just how revolutionary they were maybe at the time. If you go and watch the spy movies from the 40s and 50s, and there's many good ones, but they're all kind of very much more formal. They're much more, you know, of what you would think of as maybe traditional noir elements and all of that. And then along comes Hitchcock, and the whole thing feels much more rollicking. It's an adventure. It's exciting. It's, you know, in color, not in black and white. Cary Grant is very much this playboy character, and there's casual sex along the way, and there's, you know, all of this stuff. You know, of course, the rather infamous final shot to North by Northwest being a prime example. It's a train going into a tunnel, and yes, that is intentional, what it is meant to symbolize. So North by Northwest is this very exciting, big hit that comes out right in the middle of James Bond's early development.
I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, it's true, though. I'm not even making that up.
I believe you, but yeah. No, I was trying to remember. I just watched it a few days ago. I didn't even remember the final scene.
Yes, and it's significant to James Bond here in a moment. So if you know anything about the Ian Fleming novels, you'll know that the James Bond of Ian Fleming novels, Ian Fleming's work, is very, very different than the James Bond of, say, Sean Connery or many of the films. In fact, people have regarded Daniel Craig's interpretation as being, you know, way too serious and cold and all of that. But Daniel Craig's interpretation is honestly pretty close to what Ian Fleming originally wrote. You've read Casino Royale.
I have. I'm interested in reading the others, but Casino Royale is the only one I've read so far.
Yeah, I mean, all the elements are there, but they're looked at differently. So, for example, they're still casual sex and all of this in the Fleming novels, but it comes out of the fact that Bond is a damaged man. It's out of desperation. It's closer to, say, Mad Men, and the way that sex is presented there is something that, yeah, there's this playboy veneer, but there's this cold, desperate, damaged psyche behind it. And then, of course, you get to the Sean Connery era, and that's all out the window. You know, James Bond is this male fantasy. It's like men want to be him, women want to be with him, all of that. You don't necessarily want to be Ian Fleming's James Bond. He's a cold person, you know. I'll censor the line, but the infamous ending of Casino Royale, the bee is dead, the job is done. Like, that's such a cold-hearted statement. I believe that's in the Daniel Craig movie as well. It's like that, considering what the relationship with Vesper Lynd has been throughout that story, and that's such a cold-blooded statement to end with. But that statement informs who James Bond is in the novels. Like, everything else comes after that. Every Bond girl has to be interpreted in the novels in light of Vesper Lynd, in light of the bee is dead, the job is done. Like, just that cold-blooded mentality.
You're saying he doesn't care about anybody anymore after that.
It's not that he doesn't care. It's that, like, he cared about Vesper Lynd, and, like, that statement is so brutal, and it's a, I'm shutting myself down to do this job. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a depth to that. And so when the movies are getting developed, the fact that Casino Royale is actually sold turns out to be kind of a mixed blessing, because the movies don't have to interpret themselves through Vesper Lynd. The Bond girls can exist. In fact, as we'll see when we get to Dr. No, the Bond girls become interpreted through Honey Rider coming out of the ocean, not through Vesper Lynd. That's significant to the development of James Bond. And North by Northwest becomes the blueprint for getting there. Sean Connery's Bond is closer to Cary Grant's character, North by Northwest, and the Bond girls are closer to the love interest in North by Northwest than what's in Ian Fleming's novels.
Wow. I didn't know that. So, okay. Yeah, keep going. Oh, I guess I am interested in asking, you keep going. I have some questions for you, but keep going.
So, as all this is happening, there's serious consideration of having Alfred Hitchcock come on and direct the first Bond film, which again, at this point, was still going to be Thunderball. How far that ever got, you know, was Hitchcock actually entertaining it? Was it just tossed around? Were they actually pursuing him? There's various historical accounts of that. But at the very minimum, they saw what Hitchcock did, and that was what they wanted on screen for Bond. So a couple of interesting things begin happening at this point as development goes on. This is late 50s. I forget what year North by Northwest is. I think it's 57 or 58.
It is 59.
Oh, 59. Okay, so a few years still before Dr. No. The scripting for Thunderball and development of Thunderball begins to stall out. In particular, there's a problem that what is in the script is going to be way too expensive to film for this first movie. Meanwhile, there's also pressure to beat the Casino Royale film to the box office. Now, of course, Casino Royale, in whatever state it we could say it's in, doesn't get there until 1967. But at the time, it's in active development in late 50s, early 60s, have an actual movie.
Are we going to talk about that one tonight?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, because, we'll get there. It's
that
nuts.
That's crazy.
So a couple interesting things happen at this point. Number one, Ian Fleming gets frustrated. He goes back to his Jamaican residence, which is called GoldenEye.
Okay.
Origin of that film name, but that was Ian Fleming's property in Jamaica. And he turns Thunderball into a movie, or into a novel. He writes the novel Thunderball off of the script. Specifically, he does so without permission or even telling anybody who was writing the script that he was going to do that.
I just want to make sure I'm following your story completely. So you're saying they were going to make an original movie called Thunderball, not based on any of his books, but based on his character. It's taking so long, he just starts writing a book called Thunderball,
yes,
based on the script, but without permission.
Correct.
Okay, keep going.
And also significant from that, he writes in Spectre and Blofeld into that book.
Okay.
Kevin McClory instantly lawyers up, and several years of litigation begin over James Bond. And they involved Thunderball, and particularly Spectre. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
But if you're wondering why Spectre kind of disappeared from James Bond for about 40 years, this is why.
Okay.
It all has its origins here. So all that happens, and along the way, Henry Saltzman and Albert Broccoli, the founders of Eon Pictures, enter the scene. They make the deal with Fleming to sell the rights, and Dr. No goes into production. So let's talk about Dr. No.
Before we go there, I just want to ask, when I was growing up watching the Pierce Brosnan, James Bond films, they, you know, the same character is appearing, but really there's no through line in the story. You could watch any of those in any order, you're fine. We get to Daniel Craig, and all of a sudden, okay, there is sort of a story that's carrying on. Not sort of, there is a story carrying on. So I had imagined, prior to Daniel Craig, there was no through line story, and that's true and not true. I think there are small threads that carry on, but nothing really crucial. So I want to ask you, book-wise, because I've only read the first book, do you have to read those books in order? Is there a through line that is important?
So I've only read the first four. I would 100% start with Casino Royale, mm-hmm, but after that, they're more or less interchangeable. Mm-hmm. In the Connery movies, the plot with Spectre and Blofeld does become a through line that goes through Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay. Yes. Well, I mean, now I've seen those, so I know that. But at the time, I had thought there was no connection. So Dr. No, I'm not even familiar. Is this a book or was it just a movie?
This is a book. And in the book, this came out before any of the development. And so in the book, Dr. No is associated with Smirsch. In the movie, we are introduced to Spectre.
Yes, and number one.
Number one, who eventually becomes Blofeld, but we have no sense of who he is at this point. There's a lot of interesting things that kind of go into Dr. No's development. Dr. No was actually a monkey in early drafts.
Really?
That got back to Saltzman and Broccoli, and they quickly nixed that idea. along the way. But you have a lot of key cast members begin to emerge at this point, cast and crew members. So you have Ken Adam, who is a production designer. And so you think of all the stereotypical, and it's almost a self-parody, but like the great Blofeld's Lairs and stuff that would come later. That's all Ken Adam. Terrence Young, the director of those early James Bond movies, he did the first two and then came back for Thunderball. And then Richard Maybaum, who was involved for most of the movies, in at least some degree writing the scripts, all the way through the 80s until his death in the late 80s. So you get some pretty key crew members who emerge early on. Then, of course, there's the question of who's going to play James Bond. So before Connery is chosen, there's lots of people considered. Here's a few of the names that were thrown out there.
All right.
Cary Grant.
Makes sense.
From North by Northwest. Right. He was considered too old. He was 58 at the time. James Mason, who is the villain in North by Northwest.
Oh.
So I really like that movie.
Okay.
Patrick McGoohan, who is the prisoner.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
Robert Shaw, who would play Quint in Jaws.
Okay.
And David Niven, who would eventually be James Bond in the 1967 Casino Royale.
Really? Okay.
Yes. He's the one who's actually in
there. Man.
But Connery's chosen, and he's kind of this working class Bond, and he specifically, whereas the Bond of the novels is Eton educated and, you know, he's more of the stiff upper crust of the British. It's like with Connery, it's somebody who can wear the tuxedo, who can live in that society, but you believe he can get his hands dirty in a hurry, too. You know, Connery just perfectly embodies that kind of playboy aesthetic from North by Northwest that they were trying to go for. He is simultaneously hits all the beats of Fleming's Bond, but in not at all the same way. It's a wildly different interpretation. You have the beginnings of the formula emerge. We still have a long way to go before we get things like the theme song and all of that. But you have the gun barrel sequence. Mm-hmm. You have
right from the first movie.
Right from the first movie, Sean Connery's iconic intro in the casino of Bond, James Bond, which every other actor is imitating him in that scene because it's just – it's that iconic.
Wait, is that a line from the book or is that from the movie?
I believe it's from the movie, but it's Sean Connery's delivery – I think it's in the book,
okay,
too, but it's Sean Connery's delivery.
With the long pause?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Just like he's got this cigarette dangling out of his mouth. He's sitting in a casino in a tuxedo. Like everything about that is cool. Mm-hmm. It's like where does this whole – Bond as male fantasy come from? It's like that moment more than anything else is where, especially imagine watching this in 62. Like we've seen so many iterations of that now, but you rewind the clock 60 years, it's like, holy crap, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have that going on. You have the supervillain of Dr. No, all these elements later become significant. But one of the most significant, of course, is Ursula Andress as Honey Rider. And that scene where she comes out of the ocean, which in itself is iconic, is interesting because that, like I described, this becomes the framework for how we're going to interpret Bond and Bond girls, not Vesper Lynd, to the point where other Bond movies themselves have paid homage to that scene, most notably when Halle Berry comes out of the water in Die Another Day, and when Daniel Craig does that in Casino Royale. Those are direct homages to Honey Rider's emergence from the ocean in Dr. No.
Wow. I didn't know that Daniel Craig was copying that. I never crossed my mind. I think I heard about the Halle Berry one before.
So what did you think of Dr. No?
Well, I mean, I have my review open right here. This is the one Sean Connery film I've seen twice. I give it 3 stars. I thought that the first act was good, but that the second act wasn't that strong. I think the pacing of the third act was just kind of way off. I don't know. I guess what I was left feeling is that if it wasn't for the fact that this spy movie was a James Bond movie, it wouldn't necessarily be looked back on so fondly.
Well, I think it's foundational to what comes later. It's not the best Bond movie, but it is very good.
So I give it 3. What did you give it?
I think I gave it 4.
Okay.
I enjoyed it a lot. I will say that the Matt Anderson disapproval meter is at 0 for Dr. No. So this one at least escaped your notice. Now, people might ask,
what do you mean by that?
What is the Matt Anderson disapproval meter? Well, let's just go on to From Russia with Love.
All right, From Russia with Love. I give that one 3. I thought it was better than Dr. No, but still not great. I mean, at this point, you've already spoiled me that you want to talk about my feelings on Bond's relationship with women. Do you want to talk about it now?
Well, yes, this is one of my favorite parts of reading your reviews, is that it's obvious that you don't approve of who James Bond is. So I put the Matt disapproval meter, which is a scale of 0 to 5, at a 4 for From Russia with
because
Love.
Because you love this one,
apparently. No. The disapproval meter has nothing to do with my opinion of the movie. It's saying, how disapproving are you of James Bond?
I just feel like, okay, so now we're 2 movies into this series.
And you say, to read your quote.
Well, I could just paraphrase it, but if you want
to
go ahead.
No, I would like to read it. Bond is also not that good of a person. He hit a defenseless woman in the face in this movie, and even though the film is from 56 years ago, I felt shocked when he did.
I did. Did you feel shocked?
I did not.
Wow.
But I would say the use of the word shock took the Matt disapproval meter from 3 to 4 for this.
All right, let me say this, too, before I wrote that. Well, I talked about how it's crazy that he's sleeping with women in both this film and Dr. No, that he knows are villains. He knows they work for the bad guys. So why? Well, unless he's just a bad spy.
You'll give a theory to that when we get to Goldfinger.
Okay.
But let's not get to Goldfinger quite yet.
No, I guess we didn't really tell people we're spoiling. I know these movies are old, but we are spoiling every movie that could come up.
Yeah, see, the Matt disapproval meter is related to morals only, but I will point out that you do, on a regular interval, also comment on how you do not think that James Bond is a very good spy.
He's just clearly not. I will say this. When we talked about the through line, there is a reference in this movie back to Dr. No, so we know that From Russia with Love takes place 6 months after Dr. No.
Yeah, I mean, right from the very beginning, they want to kill Bond because of what happened with Dr. No. We get Spectre. Mm-hmm. The main agent who's sent to kill Bond is Number 7,
so,
Spectre, which is parallel to 007.
Yep.
We kind of sort of see Blofeld. He's not named. We don't
get
his face.
Do we see the cat in this one, but not him?
We do see the cat.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so Number 3. Should we move on to Number 3, Goldfinger?
Not yet. There are a couple of things first. So there's the first theme song in the series, though it doesn't appear in a with the pre-credit sequence and then the song, but it plays over the end credits. We get the first emergence of Q in this movie, which Q is kind of fun because Desmond Llewellyn, who plays him, played him as though he absolutely hates James Bond, which is a great dynamic. Yeah. And when you're looking for it, you'll start seeing it. So he wasn't sure how to play it. And then as they're figuring it out, they said, well, this guy comes in here. You show him all this stuff. He doesn't care. And he goes and ruins it, never brings it back.
And he wants the car. That's it.
Yeah. Q hates James Bond, which is just a great subtext to watch these movies with.
And this is one of the characters that clues you in later when James Bond starts changing actors. But you still get this guy who he sticks around for a long time.
Yeah, up until Roger Moore, not enough.
Oh my gosh! All the way to Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, Bernard Lee as M sticks around until the Pierce Brosnan era.
Okay.
When Judi Dench takes over.
It is strange that on one hand they're just kind of doing their own thing. All these movies sort of are they can be taken by themselves. And on the other hand, there are characters continuing through. I mean, you and I have talked about this theory that James Bond is a title more than an actual family given name. Where do you stand on that in the Sean Connery?
I think it's absurd.
So you think this is the same guy?
Well, that theory is absurd, and it becomes absurd especially when we get into On Her Majesty's Secret Service and The World Is Not Enough has a reference to it. Actually has a reference to On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where that's the Bond family crest, that's their motto. The World Is Not Enough. It's very clearly his actual name in these movies. Though, interestingly, the 1967 Casino Royale essentially runs with that entire theory.
Okay, so Goldfinger is the best one.
Hang on.
What? You
hang
still
on.
Want to do From Russia with Love?
You haven't let me give my opinion of it yet.
Oh, well, you liked that at a 4, I bet.
I gave it a 4.5, but a couple of Hitchcock homages.
Oh, okay, I like this.
Train scene.
Okay.
Which is very common Hitchcock trope. And then the scene where the helicopter is chasing Bond is a homage to the infamous crop duster scene.
I think we should come back to Hitchcock because you and I were texting back and forth this weekend about a theme that comes up in Hitchcock movies and of this mistaken identity in some way or another. I feel like we were going back and forth, I think we came up with 6 or 7 off the top of our head.
I agree.
So we'll come back to that.
So both these first 2 movies, though, are really foundational And it is in Goldfinger where things really take off.
I totally agree.
And Goldfinger is a master, a masterpiece. I give Goldfinger a 5.
So if I was going to rewatch one of these movies from the list we'll talk about tonight, it would be Goldfinger. The
or best. On Your Majesty's Secret Service.
Well, I'll give you my top three from tonight's viewings later. I actually have them all ranked out for you.
So, yeah, so Goldfinger is so good. It's so entertaining. It is. They took all the elements of Bond and really ramped it up to 11.
Okay, well, here's what I like about it. We look at Dr. No from Russia with Love, Goldfinger. Every movie gets better than the one before it, I think.
Until we get to Thunderball, but yes. You get the first opening theme song with this kind of opening title sequence followed by the theme song. And it's a great theme song, the Goldfinger song, one of the best. You get the Aston Martin for the first time. The gadgets get wilder. You also get the first emergence of kind of the Bond girl formula.
Tell me about that.
So, not all three types of Bond girls show up in every film, but the three types of Bond girls are the femme fatale, the villainous woman, the main sidekick, and the sacrificial lamb.
Sidekick is the main love interest, and yes. The sacrificial lamb is somebody he sleeps with early in the film that dies?
Yes. So in Goldfinger, of course, we have Jill Masterson, who gets painted in the gold paint. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, and then Pussy Galore kind of has both roles of the femme fatale and the main sidekick.
Okay.
As she comes along. It's also the first film to not have Spectre in it, which is interesting. Okay. So, Albert.
And that has to do with what you were talking about earlier? Or no, not yet?
Not yet. Okay. No. We'll get there. But I love Goldfinger. Why do you have it at only a 3.5? Does it have anything to do with the Matt disapproval meter, which is at a solid 3 on
this really one? Don't know. I have no idea. It looks like, I can see from my dates of viewing, I watched Dr. No on February 17th, from Russia with Love, February 20th, and then this one, February 21st. So I watched them all right by each other. It's possible, three movies in, I just wasn't that impressed with it, and I might have went into this viewing a little tainted, but I don't know. I can't tell you why. 3.5 is what I left with. And you know me, I tend to rate high.
Not of old stuff, though.
I would say the exact opposite. I give older things a bump.
I disagree. You give new things a bump 100%.
I feel like I've changed that. I think I do give, well, I guess across the board, I feel like I usually bump things up. So I think it's weird, even though I like the concept for the franchise, and I feel a fondness towards James Bond as a franchise. I don't think I like the movies that
but
much.
Not as a person, because here's what you have to say about James Bond.
All right, let's talk about it.
James has a line early in this film about his weakness with women, as if he is dealing with a problem that his coworkers know about. Mm-hmm. I love how this completely tongue-in-cheek, almost parody film, as interpreted through the morals of Matthew Anderson, becomes a confessional about sex addiction. I honestly think the filmmakers are trying to tell us he is a sex addict and can't help himself. In the first 30 minutes or so, he sleeps with or attempts to sleep with two women who work for villains.
Yes. Now, not just two regular women.
I did rate you. I put the disapproval meters at a 3 because it seems like you're trying to understand him a little more. It's like,
he's got a problem.
His fault. He has a problem. And he's trying to get help from his coworkers.
He's reaching out. I mean, it's a cry for help.
I think that within the proper reading of the film, nobody cares that James Bond is sleeping around.
I can't be alone in this, listeners. I can't be alone.
So moving on to Thunderball. So Thunderball, Kevin McClory has the rights to this movie. And he wants to make his own James Bond movie, but he also wants to make it with Sean Connery. This leads to a deal where they agree they're going to make the movie as an official James Bond movie, meaning Connery will be in it, but McClory agrees not to make another movie off of the script for at least 10 years.
So you're saying he can make Thunderball once, but he can't make it a second time within 10 years? Why would he make it a second time?
Well, ask yourself, we have never say never again. I think that's the answer to your question.
I don't understand why they anticipated that he would want to make it a second time.
The guy was suing him like crazy. I don't know.
But you get what I'm asking, right? Like, most of the time, like when we saw, like, I'm trying to think of a recent movie, when we see, never mind. I guess it's just not common that you would think someone's going to remake their own movie within 10 years.
I agree, but I guess McClory might have. Now, Thunderball.
Two and a half.
I think I gave it 3.5 It's a pretty weak movie, though. It's very slow. There's some good stuff in it. We get Spectre and all of that. But those underwater scenes, you bad. Do not film action well underwater.
No. I mean, the end is bad. The beginning just sets a tone of total cheesiness. Like, this is where we have Bond escape with a jetpack.
Why is that a bad thing for Bond?
There's the villainous death trap of him being in a stretching machine where he's going to die by being stretched to death. I mean, it just feels cheesy. Like, you can't take this film seriously right from the beginning. Those two things were in the first half hour, I think.
But do you think Bond is supposed to be taken seriously?
Well, that's the question. Maybe I was taking it too seriously.
I think you might have been. The Daniel Craig era is supposed to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And On Your Majesty's Secret Service is supposed to be taken seriously. But many of the movies are very tongue-in-cheek.
Okay, that's it. Now, I'm not... Okay, this is a good point. So, who is it on, then, to decide which movie should be taken seriously and which one shouldn't? So how I'm saying as a viewer, and I'm not putting this on you, of course. I'm saying as a viewer, how am I supposed to know?
I'm happy to be the one who decides.
How am I supposed to know when I'm going into a film? All right, now this one's just for fun, and this one's just...
Isn't it obvious from the tone?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think I don't like
Bond on a jetpack and... Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'm complaining about. So maybe I don't like... Maybe I like spy movies, but a little bit more serious, like Mission Impossible.
Could be.
We're learning things here.
We are. Okay, this is where the disapproval meter almost breaks.
What do you mean by that?
So I continue to think that Bond...
Wait, what are you reading?
Yeah, I'm reading... This is quoting Matt Anderson.
Okay.
I continue to think that Bond is a horrible person, particularly in his treatment of women. In this movie, James forces himself on a woman who rejects his advances. What was the 60s? Just a few scenes later, he blackmails this same woman into having sex with him. If she doesn't sleep with him, he will tell her supervisors about a mistake she made at work, which would lead to her being fired.
Can you imagine? This is horrible. This is really horrible, Ben. You can't support that.
So, can I just make a blanket statement? There's a difference between morals for James Bond, the fictional character James Bond, and morals for everyone else.
Okay, but how can we get on board with this protagonist when he acts like this?
I mean, I don't think it's meant to be a serious moral study.
I'm looking at my review also, and I think this is where I come up with one of my great Matt Anderson theories about number one. This is before we know who Blofeld is.
Yeah.
And when you hear the voice of number one, you don't see his face. You hear him talking. He's petting his cat. He's got this little white cat that kind of, so you know who we're talking about. It's number one. Well, his voice is Sean Connery's voice, or at least sounds very similar.
It's not Sean
Connery's voice. So I was wondering, and I at the point that I'm writing this review, I know this doesn't end up being true, but I was wondering, did they ever have the idea to make number one a James Bond lookalike or James Bond's evil twin? I mean, with the cheesiness like you're describing.
But isn't that a little bit like what they do in the remake?
Well, which remake?
Inspector, the rebooted continuity.
And I mean, he doesn't have an evil twin. In
Blofeld's like his cousin or something like that.
Is that true? I saw that movie. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, it is true.
Well, either way, maybe that's why, maybe they got that idea from this, from what I'm saying. It seems like number one and James Bond as antagonists, they're equals in some way and maybe even almost the same person, but on opposite sides. So evil twin, I think it would have fit into the cheesiness of this franchise at the time.
Well, let's keep rolling because we got four more movies.
Wow. Okay. So
You Only Live Twice.
You Only Live Twice.
The final Sean Connery movie.
Or is it?
Or is it?
Yeah, you know what I like about this one? I can see from my review it had sumo wrestling in it. And
I did see that.
I'm a fan of sumo wrestling.
There's a few interesting things. I'll actually be more interested in the sumo wrestling because of this. The Rock's grandfather choreographed the sumo wrestling themes. Yeah.
All right.
Seeds, yes.
Peter Maivia. That's his name.
Roald Dahl. That Roald Dahl wrote the script for You Only Live Twice.
Okay.
And we get Blofeld for the first time, played by Donald Pleasance. We see him. We get his lair. And this is like the stereotypical Blofeld. He's got the scar. He's got the Mao jacket on. He's, you know, we have the lair at the bottom of the volcano. I really, really liked You Only Live Twice.
Me too. 3.5.
I gave it 4.5.
Wow. I like this one as well. I think this is like an alternate world because usually our ratings are about the same. Like when we really like something, we both like it, but my rating's about 1 to 1.5 higher.
Yeah.
So you just really like James Bond.
I do really like James Bond.
So I think we're on the same trajectory. Like we both really like this one and we gave it the appropriate ratings in our own rating system.
I don't disapprove of James Bond the way you do.
Yeah.
Connery is noticeably bored in this movie.
I don't know if I picked up on that.
And that was true in real life. He wanted to be done with the role. He was sick of it. But you know, he was. You could tell in his performance, if you're watching it, that that does come through. The movie does also have an unfortunate sequence where Sean Connery is disguised as a Japanese man. That did not hold up well to modern sense.
I don't remember it, but I can imagine it being racist. I can see here that, let's see. I'm sorry, I'm reading my review. I did find this part. Even though the last half hour of the movie was one big showdown with Spectre, the thing I found myself enjoying was the earlier parts of the movie where they're quieter and just more engaging. So I think as we're talking it out, I do like the more serious stuff.
I think you do.
But I don't know why, because that's not always true about me. So why here in
James
Bond?
Maybe you just need to go into some of these early ones, forget about Daniel Craig, and just accept them as
like treat it
fantasy
like,
movies.
I could treat it like Batman 66.
Exactly.
I don't take that seriously.
Exactly.
But yeah, so what if I treated Batman 66 the way I feel like I'm treating these old James Bond movies?
That is a little bit like you're expect, like if you went into Batman 66 expecting the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah.
That would be a mistake.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I love it. We could really dissect our own feelings. Do you see, I don't know if you have my review open there, but
I do.
I have the very last note I have.
Yeah. This puts you at a 2.
So,
it's very mild.
So no, but it's not. Yeah. It's not even like something that I feel like this is not Bond doing anything wrong. But it's weird. We're 4 movies in now. 1, 2, 3. This is the 5th movie.
It's part of the formula.
And multiple Bond films end with him alone with a woman in a small boat.
Yeah, that's why it's at a 2. You don't disapprove. But it registers.
Well, as I was writing that, it was like, this is a weird sentence to type out, but it's true. I don't know how many, but a lot of these first 5 films end with him alone in a boat.
This is a good point
with a woman
to explain. Part of what I enjoy so much about Bond, James Bond films get ritual. Like they're almost liturgical. I know that's too strong of a word in some ways, but it's kind of not. In that there's like this liturgy to James Bond that's, when it's done well, is so much fun. And it's the opening theme songs. It's the pre-credits sequence. It's, you know, the Bond girl formulas. It's the ending with the girl in the boat type of thing. It's there is something that's just, it embraces the formula and makes it an asset rather than a liability. And I really enjoy that in these movies.
I'm looking ahead. It looks like we have 3 left. Very different. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which has a new Bond. We've got, well, let's just start there.
I love On Her Majesty's Secret Service. This is my favorite one of this set.
Really?
It's a masterpiece.
Now,
I think this is truly a great movie.
It's not my favorite one. I think it's my 3rd favorite of this grouping. I only give it a 3, but I remember this fondly, and I know we've talked about that sometimes, where it's like, I remember this as being a much higher rated film, but I can see I only gave it a 3, but I've remembered it well in hindsight. So, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a much more serious film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's much closer to the Daniel Craig tone, albeit in the 60s.
Of any spoilers we're going to give, this one has the biggest spoiler that I would want
it
somebody
does.
To experience.
And that ending scene is just phenomenal.
So maybe I think we have to talk about what's going to happen. So spoilers for this one. So make sure you've seen On Her Majesty's Secret Service before we go full into this movie. You know, I do like how it starts before we get into the big spoilers, where, you know, it's the first Bond movie without Sean Connery. So they have to sort of explain, don't worry, this is still the same guy. And so he just addresses the audience.
I hate that. That's the one part of the movie I hate.
Well,
it's the fourth wall break.
I think it's funny. I don't necessarily, I'm not endorsing it, but I think it's funny that they felt like they had to do that.
Yeah. Some actors that they considered, Michael Caine, Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke would have been a bad choice, but I could see Michael Caine.
Yeah, not all of their ideas were good, because Terrence Stamp,
okay,
Oliver Reed, and maybe most interestingly, Timothy Dalton.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He would have been very young.
Yeah.
You know, George Lazenby gets a bad rap. He's not great, but here's my argument. This movie is so tonally different, it would not have worked with Connery in the role for this movie. Doesn't mean that George Lazenby was the best choice, but the Connery Bond would not have worked with this movie, especially the emotion in that ending sequence when Blofeld kills his wife.
Well, that's the thing. Towards the end of the movie, there's an actual wedding, and you're wondering, how is this going to stop? Because I know James Bond isn't married in the future movies.
Right.
But it doesn't. He actually goes through with it and gets married, and then, yeah, go ahead.
and then she is killed in a drive-by shooting while they're on their way to their honeymoon. It's dark.
Really dark.
And but it's great. Like, Telly Savalas is the best Blofeld. He's just fantastic. And, yeah, I love this movie. Diana Rigg, who plays Tracy, is Olenna Tyrell in Game of Thrones.
I didn't know
so
that.
So many years later.
Well, I don't know who that. I haven't watched when she's in the show. I was wondering, I believe his wife is mentioned in future films. Is that right?
I believe she's mentioned in one future one.
Maybe Pierce Brosnan?
I think it's in Roger Moore.
Okay.
The Matt Anderson approval
or disapproval
meter was at 3.5 in this. And it's mainly because there's a lot of disapproval in this paragraph, but it's mostly directed at previous James Bond movies. So I can't count that in the same way. In a past review, I talked about how I was put off by the fact that Bond physically and sexually assaulted women in previous movies.
I mean, I stand by this.
But then, can I just pause there and commend you for your beautifully understated wording? You were put off. What were you put off by? Physical and sexual assault.
Yeah.
In this movie, James Bond pays off the gambling debt of a woman, then allows her to pay him back by sleeping with him. Right before that, he slapped this same woman in the face, and I believe the context was that he thought she was lying to him about something.
Yeah, it's like, what the heck? He's still not that good of a guy.
Just, you were put off.
Really put off, apparently. Yes. Also, I mean, look above that. I like a James Bond who's tough, fearless. Well, this James Bond, although I do like him, scared of a polar bear mascot.
Well.
Just totally freaked out.
Great Bond. The character in this one more than the actor.
And this movie did feature things that we were talking about earlier where M, Q, Moneypenny, same actors are in this movie to really show you, okay, we're in the same world. So, yeah, I'm also a fan. 3 stars. I don't know why I give it such a low score. I like it.
5 stars. I genuinely think this is I think this and Goldfinger are truly great movies.
Now, if you like Lazenby, you should check out the Hulu documentary about him. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not.
Yeah, you've got to check it out. He explains why he only did one.
I know. I'm reading all the behind-the-scenes stuff.
But, I mean, you're getting his point of view about his time as Bond, like getting the job and what happened afterwards. He was set to do a second one. But,
he fought with the director and producers on set. It was not, nobody liked each other.
Yeah, so check out the I can't remember what it's called, but maybe Bean Bond? I don't know. It's on Hulu. It's a Hulu documentary.
A Casino Royale. This is the first non-Eon production, and it is a disaster.
Yes.
In so many ways.
I remember it poorly. I gave it a 3.
This is a bad movie.
I remember it being bad. Now, but on the other hand, I knew it was a spoof going into it.
But it's not just, like, even as a spoof, I knew it was a spoof too.
Yeah.
It's just a mess. And it was a mess behind the scenes. It's a mess on the scene. Yeah, I think you mentioned in your review that there's parts that feel a little serious and then parts of... The reason why there's tonal shifts is that it was directed by like 5 or 6 different people along the way. John Huston, who plays M, directed that opening sequence, which is actually probably the best sequence in the movie, where they're going and recruiting old James Bond out of retirement. Just completely across the board, this thing was a nightmare. Peter Sellers brought in Terry Southern, who is the screenwriter for Dr. Strangelove, which Peter Sellers plays multiple roles in, to rewrite just his dialogue so it'd be better. But then Peter Sellers, who plays the role, I forgot his character name, but he's the one who actually is gambling with a Schiff, who's played by Orson Welles, and I love Orson Welles. Peter Sellers refused to film at the same time as Orson Welles.
Really?
So you have all of this drama going on. Interestingly, Ursula Andress, who was Honey Rider, plays Vesper Lynd in this movie.
Okay. I don't think I picked up on that.
But yeah, it's an awful movie.
So growing up, maybe I shouldn't say growing up, in high school, I saw Austin Powers. I think I was in 9th grade when that movie came out, and I loved it as a 9th grader and still have fond feelings towards it.
I'm going to watch Austin Powers when I'm done with this. I've never seen it.
So, well, you should watch it right now because it ties into Casino Royale so much. I thought that Austin Powers was spoofing James Bond, which it is, but I think it's spoofing this spoof. Because you'll see the character design is basically the Peter Sellers James Bond.
Should we move on?
Well, I mean, we did touch on this earlier, but in this movie, they reference Sean Connery as not the original James Bond.
That's true.
They talk about how James Bond is retired and the government has decided to continue the legend of James Bond by giving his name to anybody with a 007 call sign. So you hate this theory, you said. You don't. I mean,
it's a stupid theory.
So, yeah. Let's move on. But I give it a 3, and now that we're talking a lot, I wonder if it's because I knew what I was getting.
It's a very bad movie.
All right, where do you want to go next?
Last movie of the night, Diamonds Are Forever.
Man,
Sean Connery's triumphant return.
You know what? I'm a big fan of this movie.
I'm not.
I gave it 3.5 stars.
Wow. It's not that good of a movie. I gave it 3, so I didn't hate it. I still enjoyed it. Couple things, though, about this one. So, first of all, before Sean Connery came back, they did look at other actors. And if you thought Dick Van Dyke was bad, not that these people are bad actors, but Michael Gambon, who played Dumbledore, that could have been a good choice. Yeah. But then listen to these. Burt Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
Clint Eastwood, and Adam West were offered the part of James Bond.
Adam West would have been so great. You know, this is 5 years after. No, not five. So I think Batman debuted in 66. You know, of course, Adam West is the 1966 Batman. That show ran until, I think, 68. So yeah, he would have been, wow, that would have been great. 3 years later, he's back as James Bond. He would not have been British.
would have been a problem. Can you imagine Burt Reynolds as James Bond?
I cannot.
A couple of things with Diamonds Are Forever. I think it's one of the weaker Fleming novels, the weakest one of the four I've read. And
do you like, because it's not really something, it's so different because it's not an international adventure. It's Las Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I think it's the plot is difficult to follow. It's a mess. I don't think the Blofeld stuff on the oil rig at the end works terribly well. It goes on a little too long. I mean, I do like it. There's some good stuff in it. Oh, and Tracy. The Bond girl in this one is horrible. She's
oh man,
super
this is
annoying.
Like my favorite Bond girl. But do you know why?
Because she was on Batman.
She was in 66. Batman. Yeah.
Can you imagine her and Adam West?
I know it would have been great. Yeah. This is So Jill St. John played the Bond girl here, and she was in the very first episode of Batman 66.
So, Blofeld. This is his last appearance until Spectre. His last named appearance.
Way until the recent movie that came out within the last 5 or so years?
Yes.
Wow.
So the reason for this is, and a Blofeld stand-in does appear, I think, in For Your Eyes Only. One of the Roger Moore films shows him in a wheelchair and he gets killed, but he's never named and never shown all the way. And the reason for that is at this point, Kevin McClory won the rights to Blofeld and Spectre. So remember, Blofeld and Spectre come in the original script for Thunderball. Kevin McClory's been suing Ian Fleming and Ian Fleming's dead at this point, but Eon Productions and all that now for years and years and years. He finally wins. They can't use Spectre. They can't use Blofeld anymore. So why do you now have for the next 35, 40 years, no Spectre, no Blofeld? It's because of this. And then it was around 2010 that they bought the rights from his estate.
Even though I just watched these movies 2 years ago, I'm having a hard time remembering, did they bring in a new villainous organization or did they just kind of do individual stories?
I believe it's individual stories from this point.
So in the long run, do you think that was better for them to have a bunch of individual stories or do you think it would have been stronger if they had an ongoing nemesis?
I think that'll be a good question for our next episode.
That's great.
Of Bond,
I do want to say this movie takes place 2 years after On Her Majesty's Secret Service and it does feature Sean Connery. You know, at first you think he's getting revenge on his wife's murder by killing him, but then, of course,
he's back
before the end of the film. And I did like that there were two villains that were working together, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. They're pretty good.
They are good.
I kind of found them to be menacing. Did you find them to be menacing?
They're meant to be kind of the bumbling bad guys.
Maybe I should watch it again. I didn't pick up on them being bumbling.
Very quickly, last things, as I want to give you my rankings of the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And my rankings of the theme songs.
Oh, I don't have theme songs, but I am going to right now quickly get my rankings ready for you.
So I'll do theme songs first. The worst one, I hate to say it, but We Have All the Time in the World by Louis Armstrong from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Did not care for it, and it's also not in the opening credits. So that hurts it, in my opinion. You Only Live Twice by Nancy Sinatra. From Russia with Love, Thunderball by Tom Jones, even though the lyrics don't make any sense. He strikes like Thunderball. That doesn't make any sense, but it's great. And then
I can't remember why it is called Thunderball. Why is it called that?
Shirley Bassey takes the top two spots. Diamonds Are Forever and Goldfinger is the best Bond theme song. All right.
So tonight we discussed 8 movies.
Yes.
And I can only give them to you in from top to bottom.
Okay.
I can't count down.
We discussed 9, if you count the both Casino Royales.
Okay. Got it. All right. I'm also going to read them from my list as we go through. So let's do number 1. For me, number 1 was Goldfinger.
So it was the best one?
Yeah. So we're doing best first this time. Sorry.
Best for me, On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Number 2 for me, Diamonds Are Forever.
2 is Goldfinger.
Number 3 for me, You Only Live Twice.
It's also my number 3.
All right. Number 4 for me, The Spy Who Loved Me.
That's not in this list.
Sorry. From Russia with Love, I mean.
Also From Russia with Love.
Sorry. Number 5 for me, Casino Royale from 1954.
Dr. No.
Number 6, On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Wow, you like the 1-hour TV James Bond better than On Her Majesty's... On Her Majesty's Secret Service, by the way, is Christopher Nolan's favorite Bond movie.
You know, I like it. I gave it a bump because it's old and did well, and I wish I had rated On Her Majesty's Secret Service higher back in 2019.
Well, mine on that spot is Thunderball.
What number are we at?
7.
Because I just realized we never covered Never Say Never Again.
That's not yet.
Okay.
That's in the Roger Moore era.
Next one, Dr. No.
Next, Diamonds Are Forever.
And are we the
weakest
last?
Of the Connery. We got 2 more.
All right. Casino Royale, the 1967 one is next.
I put Casino Royale 1954.
And last, Thunderball.
And last, Casino Royale.
So how do we do? Different.
Very different. All right. Well, I'm excited for the Roger Moore era. I've never seen any Roger Moore.
I was really disappointed with Roger Moore. Okay. Well. So, I mean, I rate him as my least favorite Bond. Spoilers.
Well.
So find out more about that on the next James Bond episode. How soon should I be prepared for that one?
A couple months.
Okay, good. I got plenty of time. Yeah. All right, listeners. Well, let us know your favorite Bond films. Let us know what we got right, what we got wrong. But in the form of question and answer, we've recently discovered that we're not good at reading we read our feedback. We're not good at responding to feedback unless you ask us a question that we can answer.
You don't have to. You can just send it, but it won't get read on the air unless it has a question.
Yeah, you can send email and we'll read it. We always read them. We just always address them.
Correct.
So, and we are trying to do a question and answer episode, so who knows? So that's what we want to say. Thank you so much,
goodbye,
everybody. That's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians. Sign it off.
Goodbye.
Ben, you had some great insights tonight.
Thank you.
I love this kind of episode where I can learn more about a subject I'm interested in.
I have learned a lot of interesting things about James Bond.
Yeah, so thank you. I almost don't want to wait 2 months. I
got to watch. There's like 8 movies.
Can you try to fast track that, please?
I'll do my best.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks again, and so long, folks.
Goodbye.